Blog Talk Radio.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Though your world is torn apart and you're left with a broken heart and you feel that there's no real healing inside. Oh no, but this I know.
Yes, he always makes it all right. I start with that every week, and this week may be a little bit more challenging or a little bit more discouraging as you look at the news and you see all that's going on in the world and you wonder, God, what's going on? But you know what? He is still here. He is still moving, and he is moving through us. So it's really important for us not to become so discouraged and so weary with whatever it is that we are carrying or thinking about that we're not able to accomplish the gift that he placed in us and to fulfill the that he has for our life. And I just want to take a moment to remember those in who are going through crisis in this world right now, both here in this nation and abroad, and to let you know that as simple as the phrase sounds, I do encourage you still not to give up and not to give in and to continue going forward. And our guest tonight is a wonderful example of what it means to keep pushing on, whether that adversity is coming from outside of yourself or within yourself. Tonight, we have author, coach, mentor, and so much more. James Dentley has actually trained over 400,000 people in business. Imagine that. And he's personally created people who have, great wealth, over 70 millionaires. And, you know, we think, well, why are you saying that, Jackie? Why is that important? Well, you know, there's great work to be done in the world. And when you think about nonprofit organizations and churches and the type of work that needs to be done to feed people and clothe people, you need to have people who have resources. And so James Dentley has been a man who has kept his intact along with leadership and success skills. Even Les Brown has been one of those who've been under his wing and highly recommend James' work. So, James, I'm very fortunate to have you on the show tonight. Thank you for being here.
Well, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. I went to the Small Business Expo here in New York City, and you were there with one of your workshops, and I said, there's something different about this guy. And we were able to chat a little later, and I found out there's a number of things that's different about you, and our listeners will be able to get a sense of that as we talk tonight. As always, I like to get a sense of all the building blocks that made you who you are today. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what was your childhood like, your family life, your upbringing, how many siblings you had, you know, paint that picture for us.
Well, let me start with this. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me on your show. And, you know, when I met you and I got a chance to know a little bit about your work, I was extremely excited and very humbled to get a chance to speak to any of your listeners because your work is extremely special. You know, there is nothing more powerful than being fully self-expressed when you talk about the human condition and our human experience, because so many of us feel like that we're alone. And when you hear from different people, you're interviewing people and you're sharing, you're giving, it lets a person feel connected. They know that they're connected. They know that are not by themselves, that that unique situation, no matter what it may be, is what connects us all, but it really makes us stronger, makes us better, and it really gives us the power and it gives us the ability to help other people go through something because we've gone through something and we've come out
absolutely
with still standing. So thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Okay, well, my story. My mother had three girls, and I'm the only boy. I'm second from the oldest. And we had a lot of love in our family. My parents divorced when I was very, very young. And not understanding the whole divorce situation, when, like most kids don't, because in those days, a child stayed in the child's place. You know, the parents didn't really talk to children. Like some cultures are taught and raised to share the story. Well, we were taught to stay out of grown folks' business. And we were put into another room. And I thought my father didn't like me. I took it very personal. You know, as a little kid, I thought they divorced because of me, like other kids do. You know, so I didn't hate my father. I wanted to be with my father, but the emotion was there. And I didn't know how that emotion was driving me into many, many years later and that need, and then to backtrack it and analyze it. But we were raised with a lot of love. And my mom worked in a grocery store in the day, and she worked at a dentist office by night. So we didn't have a lot of money, but she would take us downtown Chicago, and we were window shop. We were looking in the windows, especially around Christmas time. We have all the lights, and you got all these big department stores, Marshall Fields, when they were around, and they had all these mechanical toys in the windows with the lights around them and the fake snow, and they were moving around. They were all mechanical, and it allowed us to dream. If I look back, she used to take us to plays. I remember seeing Peter Pan, and remember the song when I was 5 years old, "I won't grow up, I don't want to go to school. All I want to do is play from morning to afternoon." She got us into music lessons, and we all sucked at it. We were horrible. None of us lasted a year, but I think it was three of us because the youngest was too young. But we would get on the train and at a very young age, too young to go downtown Chicago by yourself, certainly in today's world, but we would go down there today, down there and hold hands on Monday. And during the summer, we would take our lessons and we would hold hands and get back on the train and come back together. So our whole family is about being together, you know. So mm-hmm. That's where I was raised. And all my life, I always wanted to work. I always wanted to make money to help my family. And I would create odd jobs. I'd work and do whatever it took to rake leaves, shovel snow. You didn't have to ask me to do it. I was looking for things to do. I was looking how to take the Kool-Aid and put it in a Dixie cup and freeze it and then flip it over and sell it for a nickel or dime in the community. So I've always worked very, very early because I wanted to be there for my mom.
You know, I love the fact that you say that she allowed you to dream. And sometimes we think that we need to have money, but just exposing you to those places. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking in New York City, we have a magazine called Big Apple Parent, and it lists all of the free events that's happening in the city. And there's so many things, music and museums. And I would lug my kids and take them there. And now that they're young adults, they actually may not remember the exact thing, but those moments of culture were actually they were taken into their character. And so the level by which they dream at their age is a lot larger than what I was doing at their age. So I love the fact that your mom had that foresight, and I love the fact that she said that she did whatever you do as a family, and it allowed you to think, well, you know, what can I do even as a little boy to bring income into, you know, and to do things and selling Kool-Aid and, you know, shoveling and raking, all those things are really great. But tell us about your first real job and how eye-opening that was for you.
Okay, here goes my age. My first real job, my stepdad was a foreman at a foam fabrication company. And I worked there this summer as my first real paycheck. I had worked in the summers when I was 8, 9, and 10 doing odd jobs, but this was the first one I got a paycheck, a W-2. And I would unload trucks and stuff the extra foam in the bags and tie it up. And minimum wage was $1.67 an hour. And the eye-opening part, the work ethic was an issue. I mean, it was 9 to 5 for real. But I realized that there were adults living on that money, and I was taking a job that some other adult could have had at that time, and because of my relationship to him. But he really instilled in me the work ethic, the importance of showing up on time, and and taking care of business. And it was tiring. It was rough. But I really learned work ethic right there. But I learned the value of people who work every single day, that sometimes it's a struggle, but they come to work and they have a good time with their coworkers. They do what they have to do, and they go home and they come back the next day.
You know, it's a real startling moment when you get that first paycheck. You realize how hard you work and how little is in the check. And then you realize, wait a minute, adults are earning this amount of money, you know, and it really causes you to start to think about life. And we're going to get to that in a little bit, but I want you to also share with us about the faith of your family and what your mother instilled in you growing up as well.
Well, we were always in church. We didn't have a church home until it was one summer afternoon, and I was outside playing, and a woman came up and she screamed, shouted my name, and she was standing on my porch, so I guess I was supposed to go to her. And she came and said, my mother told us to try to come pick us up, and she was going to take us somewhere. We didn't know where it was. I didn't want to go with her. And somebody grabbed me by my ear, and they put me in a car with my three sisters. They took us to a church, Third Baptist Church in Chicago, and I met Reverend Elmer Alfalo. I was 8 years old, and he was so kind, and his voice was just, it was soothing, but it was so commandful. I guess he was like a dad. And he asked me, say, okay, where are you going to work in the church? He said, you can work in a choir or you can be on the deacon board. And I liked to read, and I didn't like sitting still, and I knew in the choir everybody could see you. And so I said, I'll try the deacon board. And that was back in 1966. And I've been a member of that church from that day until today, and watching it grow from something very, very small to something very, very big. So I memorized the books of the Bible very early, and I didn't really realize that I had this gift of retention. But I memorized the books of the Bible, the 51st Psalms, when I was 8 years old. I mean, all these different verses that I maybe didn't understand what they all meant, but I could not get them out of my head and still can't to this day. So that was the beginning when I really understood that I had a gift to retain information.
Well, that's awesome. When we come back, we're going to find out what more did God do with this child of his when we return.
Of the God.
You're listening to Don't Give Up Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, and I promised you that if you tuned in tonight, I would give you an opportunity to win a free copy of the number one DVD in the nation right now called Old Fashioned. It was a Valentine's Day movie that was did its David and Goliath against another movie, which I will not mention, that was expected to do well in the box office. But this little sweet love story won the hearts of millions of Americans. And now I have a copy to give away. So keep listening, because at the end of the show, I will give you the call-in number. And the first one to dial in will be the winner of this week's DVD selection. We are with James Dentley, and he has been explaining to us just how his life of success started, and it actually started a lot like the rest of us, in a family that had a mom and a dad and became a single home. He internalized some of that, thinking that maybe it was his fault, went on to do the best that he can to help out, and growing up in church, and even finding out that he had the ability to retain a great deal of information, almost like a photographic memory. And so now I'm curious to know, as you grew up and you went on to do things in business, how you were able to use those skills to help you, because you actually became one of the youngest managers in a franchise. So tell us a little bit about that piece of your journey.
Well, it was my 17th birthday, and I decided to get up and go find a job. So I put up several applications. I walked into a Turkish fried chicken restaurant, and the young lady came out after I filled out the application. She said, "You seem like such a nice boy, but you're only 17. You have to be 18 to work here." She said, "Let me go talk to the manager." And she came back, said this big smile. Her name was Denise Sale. I haven't seen her since the 70s. And she came back and she said, "I changed your birth date. You're 18. And I asked the manager to hire you. She wants to meet you." And Martha Gleason walked out, this little short Army sergeant, reservist, and she talked to me for about 5 minutes and gave me a job. The challenge was I was in school, and I had to work from 6 p.m. It didn't close until 2. We didn't get out of there until 3 or 3:30 in the morning, and I had to be back at school. So minimum wage at the time was $2 an hour, and I went to work there, and they spread my schedule out so I can get as much rest as I possibly could. But that was the beginning of it. And what happened, Jackie, is I actually memorized the operation of the procedure manual, the policy and procedure manual, the operation manual, and the repair maintenance manual. I mean, I could tell you about every motor and the serial numbers on motors. It got to be so serious that we would compete to see who could know the most. And so we even counted the tiles on the floor, the bricks that held up the building. We just were in competition of who could know more about this business and this restaurant and this building and everybody else. How many inches were you sitting from the floor? And when I got out of high school, on graduation, they made me the general manager, the youngest general manager in the company. And I had my own, 18 years old, I was a general manager of Church's Fried Chicken, and then went on to become a regional and district manager as well.
Awesome.
When I went to... Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, I was just saying that's an awesome story, that your abilities and your diligence allowed you to be the youngest manager. And I remember Church's Chicken. They were one of my favorites. that extra crunch. You can still find them in Georgia. Hard to find here in New York City, though. And, you know, I wanted to just fast forward a little bit, because I know you had a great deal of success there, but there was a con to the level of work, and that was your time. You were devoting a lot of time. You were successful, but you were losing a lot of your time. Explain how that impacted you.
Well, that and even going to Steak and Ale restaurant, which is Steak, Lobster, and Crab Rangoon throughout Texas, very demanding, because you're working 65 to 80 hours a week. And most people in that field don't stay married or get married. They burn out, and nobody stays to 65 because you can't last that long. So I really recognized that, and I wanted to become an entrepreneur, because when I got with Steak and Ale, with 7 dining rooms and 150 employees, and developed some communication skills, because living in Abilene and Texas and Midland, Odessa is a lot different than Chicago or New York or a metropolitan city. So I had the ability to communicate and become effective when I was growing. And so I decided to become an entrepreneur. I said, surely if I could build somebody else's multi-million dollar business, I can go into business for myself. And that was the beginning of that journey to reintroduce myself to it, from as a child hustling and just finding things that I can do to starting actual companies. And that's where it began.
And lo and behold, when you started your entrepreneurial work, you found out that time was still a problem.
Oh, man, I found out that I own the businesses, but they actually own me. And I would find myself working sometimes 7 days a week, 17 hours a day, because if somebody didn't come to work, or if I didn't have enough money to pay somebody, I had to be there from the beginning to the end and do everything. And I just got married, and a lot of things suffered because of that. And even though we had an amazing lifestyle, there was a price to pay. And I really realized that the price really wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth chasing money. You know, you think that's your measuring stick, that's your new report card now, how well you can do and how well you can take care of your family as a provider, but then you lose a lot at the same time if you're not present. And that's what I really realized and got from that experience.
You know, when people are working like that and they have so many demands and expectations on them, and even though they're successful, even though they have faith, there are times that because of that tiredness, that weariness, that go, 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 things start to sneak up on you. You find yourself slacking in certain areas that you were very diligent on. You came to a period in your life where you actually started to do things, view things, and become another person. Paint a picture. I like that phrase. Paint a picture of, you know, the things you started to do and the person you started becoming.
Well, you know what? As most people would assume, there's nothing wrong with having a casual drink every now and then. What I didn't realize was what addiction was, and because other people were in my family had went through addiction, that it is possible that can be part of your genes, where you're you're more in danger of going over the edge. And addiction means not just to drugs or alcohol, but to anything, that you're more apt to go there based upon your DNA sometimes. It's like green eyes and brown eyes. And then when the stress was hitting, then I decided to do something that's what I'd never do, and I tried drugs. I tried it on. I thought I could control it and handle it and realized I couldn't handle it and realized that I drank even more, and I drank and drank and drank. And, you know, and even being in a situation and being married and going through that, you know, I wasn't showing up. I was trying to escape, and I really had to make a decision to find some. And this happened many years later. At this point, I was involved in a home-based business arena. So now I have my time back, but I stressed out to another level because now I'm on stage training and teaching and getting standing ovations. But I still went back to the little bitty boy who didn't think he was good enough or loved enough, and I decided to prove it. And so everything was going pretty well. My wife, at that time, I was able to retire my second wife on our wedding day. So we were doing well at that point. But it was just the high speed. The highs sometimes are too high. The lows get too low. And I found that when you take a life inventory, I had to find ways to balance my life. But I couldn't do it by myself. I prayed about it and called my family together. And I said, look, I'm not going to hide from this anymore. Most of you guys probably have figured it out, but I've got a problem. And I need some help. So I decided that my family helped me find a place that was 2 hours outside of Chicago. I went there and checked myself in for 28 days. And I'll tell you this, this is really important because at this time, I'm at the top of my game. I'm making more money in a month than I ever made in a year. I'm doing really, really well. I'm known all over the country and through other countries in this company. But I didn't feel deserving of it. And when I went to that rehab, I felt like nothing, like I let the world down, like I was dirt. Like it was like, how could this have happened to me? Because I was the one who motivated and inspired everybody else. But that wasn't helping me at the time. I was suffering. And I remember driving out there talking to a friend of mine, man. I was really broken. But you know what? God met me there, and I prayed to God to save me. And I got there, a lady named Miss Mary, who was the only Christian counselor there. She was given to me. I was given to her. I was put in her hands. And she taught me some things that helped me understand and actually begin to write books and begin to understand you keep what you have by giving it away. I realized so many people are hurting and suffering but I can keep myself more in balance, as like stay in tune with it and keep the humility, but be able to help other people and knew that what I had gone through had a bigger purpose than even myself and my ego and my arrogance, mm-hmm. that I can control and handle some things that it wasn't for me to deal with.
You said something that's so powerful that I hope I have to repeat it because I don't want anyone to miss it. It's one thing when we're facing those kind of challenges, no matter what it is, if it's alcohol, if it's overeating, sex, whatever, drugs, mm-hmm. that we can pray on it because we're saying, hey, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm a believer, I love the Lord, I love his word, I don't even know why I'm doing this stuff myself, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. we get into this thing where we pray about it, but we still don't see that level of change. We're still going back over and over again. You mm-hmm. took that extra step of courage to say, family, I'm coming to you. I'm being vulnerable. You've seen it because oftentimes they see it, but nothing's being said or done. I need you. I need help. And that's one thing. That's huge. We have to expose it to the light so it can be dealt with. In fact, I think you said something to me along those lines, very powerful when we were talking in terms of exposing it to the light.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because it didn't have no power over me. And I knew I wasn't being authentic to who I appeared to be. I knew it was an act. And I was tired. And I knew, see, when you're helping other people and other people come to you, you know, your infection is even worse now because you really feel like dirt. Because how can this happen to you? There's such a high expectation that people have on you. But what I learned, and even through Christ, was to understand what surrender means. And it didn't mean that I was defeated. It means that I had to be restored, which means that all the old stuff had to be chipped away from me, had to be cut off of me. But that's not comfortable because myself and other people, we want to hold on to our stuff because we have shaped the paradigm of our life and our truth around our habits and what we've been doing and what we think is the right thing, but it wasn't working. And I had to look at, wow, do I want to be right or do I need my life to work? Do I need to be a better dad? You know, I'm dropping my son off at 6 in the evening and saying I'll be back in 2 hours and I come back the next morning at 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a baby, but it still was affecting him because, you know,
right.
I can't make the excuse that he didn't know. You know, I knew. You know,
right.
And I wasn't being authentic. So I couldn't live like that. And I had to make a serious decision. And I knew that there was a song in church that you always sing about Christ asks you to surrender. I surrender all.
Yes, yes.
And
in that surrendering, you found your power. And the
yeah.
process, you know, when we say phrases like, you know, find my power, it sounds so immediate. But that 28 days of you checking in, you did another thing that was extremely courageous and committed to surrendering, and that is taking 28 days away from your business, away from making money, away from being on the stage and getting that high, like you said, on getting yourself better and mending your family. A lot of times, men, and nowadays women too, will not walk away from that moment. I know there was a point in time where I heard Sissy Houston say that she came to a point with Whitney where she said, you know, you're either going to, you know, fix this or you're walking away from the business. You know, it's either or. And it's a hard decision to make. And if we realize when you're tasting that level of success, what it is, to walk away from that, to take the time that you need. Can you speak to someone who might be in that place and get them to understand why it's so important
mm-hmm.
for them to take that action?
Yeah. Well, let me say this. Courage has nothing to do with it. Either God is or God isn't. Faith has
mm-hmm.
everything to do with it. And understand it has to be something bigger than yourself. So it was a complete surrender. Because, see, you can hurt yourself because we're responsible for our own actions. But when you love somebody and you have people in your life you care about and you find yourself doing things that are destructive, then you can come to a point to own that because you don't feel good about the actions. You may want to justify them if you like, but it doesn't work. And so you have to make a decision. And I'll tell you this. The reason why your show is so important and why I love to have the opportunity to share it. Because everybody, no matter what you're going through, you're building your story. And a life worth living is worth recording. Your story has meaning, even if you feel like you're in a dumpster, you're in a gutter, it could be your relationships on the rocks, it could be your job, you could be afraid. All these things that you go through, they are based and anchored in fear. And there's three primary fears of not feeling loved enough, not feeling good enough and worthy enough, or not having control and a loss of control. And these are fears that we have. And we respond to them the best way we can with this human defense mechanism to try to protect ourselves. But in turn, instead of protecting ourselves, we hurt ourselves. And we make, when things go wrong, we tend to make it worse. We go wrong with it. You know, so in going there, I needed to have answers because I could not fix myself. So when I couldn't fix myself, I had to surrender to something and understand it and surrender not only to admit it, but to surrender to the process. So it wasn't courage that got me through it. It was faith that if I surrendered, that there would be something that when you take that step off that cliff, that emotional cliff, that either God's going to have a net down there to catch you or you're going to build your wings and fly. But now you're going in a different direction. Like Robert Frost said, two roads diverged by the woods, and I chose the road let's travel by. The courage came in when I came out to understand that I had to keep it in the light and to go to the president and CEO of the company that would put me in front of 20,000 of his people and the leadership that looked up to me. And I knew some of the leaders had gone through it before. And for me to make the phone call and be honest with them and let them know what had happened and let my friends know where I had been. Because now, see, once I decided not to hide it, it had no power. Now I had to just live that life. And now I was accountable because people around me now could address me the right way or not offer me a beer at a social event. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's where the courage comes in. The courage comes in to live it and to go make atonement for it and bring it back into the light. I say, look, I'm not perfect, and you can be, but you can be perfect within your imperfection. Just get up and you just keep moving, and you'll be okay.
The point that you said that it's not courage, it's faith, is key, because if I felt that it was courage, I might say to myself, well, I'm not naturally a courageous person, so I can't accomplish what he's accomplished. But, you know, the Word of God says that he has appointed to each of us a measure of faith. So every human being on this planet who belongs to him is given a measure of faith. So we cannot say, hey, you gave him singing and you didn't get, you know, and so faith is extremely crucial. And I always mention on this show, Romans 10:9-10, that if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that you shall be saved. And that's where this relationship begins. And once you enter into that, that measure of faith is given to you. So whatever it is you're facing, you can actually build your wings and fly, like James said. And when we come back, we're going to hear exactly where God has allowed him to fly to.
I can do it if Yolanda, won't you sing the song?
See, I was on the verge of breaking down. Sometimes the silence can seem so loud. There are miracles in life I must achieve, yeah. But first it's got to start.
Here with James Bentley. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, Don't Give Up Radio. And we are realizing that no matter what you're facing, if you're honest about it, bring it to the light, and you get the help that you need and the support that you need, and as long as you're walking hand in hand with God, that you are able to change those circumstances and be free. And you were sharing with us, James, just as we left into that song, that you actually received a level of freedom that allowed you to be able to move forward. And I want you to talk to us about what that transition was like from that point on, and what are some of the things that you've gone on to do?
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate that and blessed that in traditional business, I didn't make money. I just wasn't happy, and I was in a trap, and I found a way to get rid of the money, to get past it. It was attached to my pain. I was kind of kidnapped and taken to a meeting about a home-based business. And I say kidnapped because I had no intention of going, and I refused to go. And this was back in 1994. And I got in the car thinking I'm going to go to TGI Fridays. And I've been sent into a meeting. And I met some incredible people. This was in Atlanta, Georgia. And I thought I would give it a try just in case it worked. I was afraid that if it worked, if I didn't do it and it worked, then shame on me. Because I was divorced. I'm living in Atlanta. I've got a child in Chicago. And I'm frankly 2 months behind in child support, and that was an issue. And I needed to be able to fix that, to show up as the man and be the father I wanted to be in her life. And so I get involved in this company on a part-time basis. I'm working 65 hours a week. I don't have a lot of time. Just started a little coupon magazine. And I get involved in this company, marketing and sharing telecommunication services and saving people money in their long distance and getting paid every time they pay the bill. I did it part-time. It was May 26th of 94. By January 13th of 95, I'd almost tripled my income from my job and fired my boss and went on to build a multi-million-dollar business in 12 countries. And we helped the company grow from $5 million to over $700 million. And we all made a lot of money. But more importantly, it only happened because one of the owners came and moved to Atlanta for 3 months, and he selected me to be one of the 16 people he trained. And this is an important thing about a story because he told me that he and his twin brother were homeless at 24, millionaires at 28. So when I went through the part of being homeless, and that happened to me as well, you know, I always say change the way you look at things and the things you look at change. Now, that's key because I had his story to hold on to. So when I ended up being homeless, and sleeping in my car and putting them on a hotel parking lot and putting a comforter over my head, I could do it with a smile because I didn't like where I was, but I knew where I was going because I had a vision. I had a vision unlike anything that had been shown to me. And this young man, 7 years younger than me, he told all of us, he said, before we teach you how to make money, we will teach you who you must become because your success can take you someplace your character would never keep you. So he taught us a different way of thinking, a different way of being, and made us understand that, you know, that what you seek is seeking you. If you really seek with all of your heart, the laws of attraction are really real, but you have to become more in order to achieve more, because in life you get what you expect, not what you want.
What you seek is seeking you. And, you know, we often don't believe that, you know. And one of the things that you did during the workshop that I sat in on is you shared a poem, and I want you to be able to share this with us right before you go into, you know, your style that you use when you mentor people and coach people, and that is the Habit poem. If you could just recite that, it would be great.
Okay. Well, let me say it like this. Everything happens starts with the way we choose to think. Our thoughts influence our words. Our words, they influence our actions. Our continuous actions develop our habits. And that's our paradigm. Our paradigm is a series of habits. The poet once said, "Who am I? I am your constant companion. I'm your greatest helper or your heaviest burden. I can lift you upward or I can drag you down to failure. But if you teach me to do a thing repeatedly, I begin to do it automatically. I am easily managed, but you must be first. I am the first of all those who are great. And alas, those who are failures as well. Those who are great, I have made great. Those who are failures, I have made failures. I am not a machine, yet I operate with the precision of a machine, yet the intelligence of a human being. But if you teach me and train me, I will lay the work at your feet. But if you're easy with me, I will destroy you. Who am I? I am called Habit. Habit is my name."
That is so powerful. So powerful, and we just don't think about it. We allow habit to take full control and run our lives amok. So when you coach, when you mentor, how do you get people to retrain and get themselves refocused into, seeking them?
Wow. There are several steps that I use. And I'll just say, first of all, we open up with getting clarity. What is it that you truly, truly want? Not what you think you have, not that you're limiting beliefs based upon how you live, but what do you want in your wildest imagination? What do you truly want? And if I ask you, what do you want, and you tell me and give me an answer, I say, no, what do you really want? And I keep digging. Most people almost well up and want to cry, because at the end of the day, we just want to be somebody. We want to know our life had meaning, it had purpose. Somebody was proud of us, then we're okay, you see? So what do you really want? Of course you want the things, but the things happen when you happen, okay? So the first thing is getting clarity on what it is that you want. The second thing is the shift in your language, because language is everything. You see, you attack your lack or your lack attacks you. If you talk about, well, I want to get rid of my bills, you're never going to get rid of them because your focus is on the bill. It's almost like a race car driver. When they're in training, they're taught when that car spins out of control, never look at the wall, because if you look at the wall, that's what you're going to hit. You look at the field. That's why when a person loses control of a car, and they're on the expressway, and there's a pole here, there's a big gap, and there's another pole, most people hit the pole because in their mind they're saying, don't hit the pole. So the pole is the focus, okay? So you have to have a grand vision and understand that everything in life happens two times, the thought, then the thing, the inner, then the outer, the mental, and then the physical. So you put that thought and that vision in your mind, that idea about what it is that you truly, truly want with your wildest imagination. You have to have a dream to make a dream come true. And then when you put that dream there, you'll start seeing things show up when you keep that eye single, when you are focused on it, and when you learn to speak it and then communicate with yourself and communicate with others. So then you have to study your craft. You know, and then it's been a really important part, if you want to accelerate it, is who do you spend your time with? There's a book called Jesus Christ, CEO. It says that if four of your friends are broke, then you're going to be the fifth one. The Bible says he who keeps company with the wise shall be wise, but he who keeps company of fools shall be destroyed. So who are you spending your time with? Because it's no different than a child. If a child spends their time with people who smoke and do drugs, the odds are they're going to smoke and do drugs. If they spend their time around people doing their homework, the odds are that they'll do their homework. So it applies to all of us. Who are we spending our time with? And I'm not saying get rid of all your friends and family members. No. You don't have to do that. But when you find some other people to plug into, or you ask yourself, where are successful people going? Where are they learning to become more successful? What are they reading? You have to learn to read. And, you know, I coach people to read books and then talk about what they read and then read them in a certain order. They'll build their belief. Give them books that will captivate them and take them on a journey that I know they won't be able to put it down. And then take them on this journey, and once the journey begins, then they have a thirst to stay on it. And remember, only quality people. I have a concept, and you know, we've all heard the anecdote that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right?
Yes.
I said, don't lead horse to the water. Let's find some thirsty horses.
Okay.
You know, stop looking for people to be something they're not. See, I can get a person to do anything they already want to do. But a person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. If you don't want to do it, there's nothing to be done. But if you want to do it, a great coach will teach you how to accelerate that. And I teach people how to start businesses from home, whether they already own one, or whether they have nonprofits, or they want to raise capital, or they want to get retirement income, they want to get through school, or they have the audacity to think that there's something great in their life and they can make a true difference. And I teach people that, you know, the power of those relationships is going to be the key. And when you become a communicator, and these are things that anybody can learn. I have a 12th grade education. I wasn't even good there. Anybody can learn this stuff. I learned this from people. I read their books. I spoke with them. And when I read so many books, Jackie, that the people I would read about showed up in my life, and now some of them are friends.
That
when
awesome.
I picked up the book, yeah, it's crazy.
It's a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing. And I know our time is actually gone, believe it or not. And I know people are listening, and they're going to want more of you and what you have to offer. And what I really loved and gravitated to you is because, you know, you're talking success, you're talking leadership, you're talking faith. and faith in Jesus Christ. So that, for me, that was the draw, because there's so many things out there right now, people who are coming from various perspectives, and you know, people find what works for them. But I know that anything anchored in the Lord is going to propel me to where I need to go. So when I saw that connection in you, I was like, yeah, this is it for me. So tell people how they can connect with you and what are some of the things that you have to offer.
Well, I'll tell you what. They can go to my website, which is jamesdentley.com. That's D-E-N-T-L-E-Y. I can be emailed directly at jd@jamesdentley.com. We're looking for people throughout the country who want to live a healthier life, want to help other people live a healthier life, want to live a healthier financial life, and want to help other people live a financial healthier life, whether it be an organization or an individual, to go in that. We also look for speakers, people who want to become better speakers, better communicators. Even if you want to make it a career, and I'll teach you how to make it a seven-figure career. If you want to give back, we're going to show you how to be more effective in giving back, to speak into the listening, and really the psychology of communication, to understand how to speak to you, become even more effective in what you do, whether you're in the pulpit or you're in the principal's office. It doesn't matter, because communication in every relationship is really, really key. And then lastly, you know, I've learned that the greatest commandment is to love, and that's the core of motive. And when you can move from that space, what you're going to find is a sense of peace, and with that peace comes a sense of gratitude. And you're able to operate in the things that will bother most people. They don't affect you the same way. Will you be infallible? No. Will you be perfect? No. Jim Rohn said, it's not the blowing of the wind, but it's the set of the sail, because the wind blows on us all. But if you have that sail set, then you're not, the wind is just your helper, because you can navigate and maneuver that sail, and the wind will help you. The troubled times, the tough times, will help you even excel and be better as you go through your journey to accomplish what you truly are here to accomplish. So I believe in collaboration. I believe in joint ventures. I believe in making a difference. And I know that I love my life, and I know that I love your life too. And anybody who's listening, I don't have to know you, but I love you because I can do that, because I understand how to do it, because it's not about what I can get. It's about what I can offer, what I can serve. How can I serve? How can I give? And that would be my intention in every relationship, to do my very best to bring value into it. So I just love what I do. I'm very thankful. You know, I live a lifestyle now to have, to not have to work for 20 years and to make, you know, the money is just a tool, but to be in a seven-figure bracket from sleeping in a car, all I have is a story, and it's not even for me, it's for my children, and to teach them the principles, but more importantly, I got my time back, so I don't have to work as hard making a paycheck as I do to create a legacy, and that
and
is what I'm learning.
If anyone listening wants to know more about that as well, that's another reason why to connect with James Bentley, so that you can find out exactly more about that. Listen, our time is gone, but this has been such a blessing to me. I am smiling from ear to ear here. I'm going to listen to this over myself and get the many nuggets that you've imparted. And thank you. Hopefully we can have you on again at some other point.
It would be my humble pleasure anytime, and you're doing awesome work. Please don't ever stop.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep going on. And for those of you who are listening, I want you to know to continue to be your own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you. He saw the winner in you, and you have to believe that it's true. Hey.
What are you?